What is your name?
I'm Steve Hazen. I'm 61 years old, and I'm a farmer.
Okay. I'm Kelly Hazen, 57. We're from Protection, Kansas. I'm the farm wife.
Okay. So, where were you when you first became aware of the Starbuck fire, which we're going to call the fire that happened on March 6th?
We were at home. We'd just eaten dinner.
Well, yeah, we started off real early that morning and weighed up some calves on wheat. And we got up like at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we got that done, and we was at home. And somebody said there was fire.
Yeah, that's
Dustin
called back and said Frosty and Faye Ettinger's house was in danger. And we just said, we got to go help Faye and
Frosty.
Yeah,
we just took off in a pickup to go help them, you know, to move something out. And en route, we got about 5-6 miles from home, and Kyle Kaltenbauer, our nephew, called us and said, hey, can you bring your Ranger over to Englewood and help me move some cows to Mom and Dad's?
Kyle called Dustin. Dustin called us.
Oh, is that how it was?
Yeah, that's. We'd just gotten to Ashland when Dustin called. He was coming to town for fuel and his Ranger. So we turned around and went back and got our Ranger to go help them.
That's exactly right.
And that's when we stopped to get fuel in the pickup and the Ranger about 1:30.
Yeah.
Haley pulled up to the pumps. And I asked her, I said, have you got anything out of the house yet? She said, oh, it's not going to get that far. And I said, I think you might ought to go back to school and tell school pay attention. And she kind of chuckled at us, you know. And so we went on then to help Kyle. And that's what we...
We pulled up there, and the fire that we saw, the only smoke we saw was southwest of where we were at. It looked like, you know, fire is deceiving, smoke is deceiving, but it looked like it was... It honestly looked like it was 15, 20 miles from us.
We were 3 miles south of the 12-mile corner.
And the smoke...
Englewood Junction.
And the smoke was... The wind was out of the northwest, moving it to the southeast. We was northeast of it a long ways, you know. There shouldn't be any way that... The cow says, what do you think? I said, well, I don't know. He said, what about taking your Ranger and driving up on this hill, sand hill, and looking at it better? We can see it better. And I said, let's go. Well, I was driving, and he gets in there with me, and I said, or I take off. I said, you know, shoot, what am I doing driving? You know this pasture, you know, and I don't. I said, you get it. So I got out, and I've said this many times, that was a mistake, because he was driving one-handed, going through sagebrush over these sand hills, wide open, and he was talking on his phone, and the steering wheel was just rattling, and I was hanging on with both hands on the rail. No, in the way.
Anybody's ever rode with Kyle?
But we get to the top of the hill, and he said, "I don't see any flames." And I said, "I don't either." And he says, "What do you think?" And I said, "You know, Kyle, we're here. Why don't we just be safe instead of sorry? Let's just go move them. We'll bring them back when we need to." And okay, fair enough. So that's, but you know, we didn't think that it was gonna. I didn't think there was a chance. We left there. We moved those cows and left there, and then went to Mike McCarty's.
We put the cows on Mike McCarty's wheat across the highway from Mark and Mary's pasture, and then we heard that Faye and Frosty's house had foamed it. It made it. It burnt everything but the house. It burnt all around them. There was no need of trying to... We couldn't have gotten to there. So we headed to Mike McCarty's. He called Mike, talked to Mike. Mike was in the pickles, what I've heard. He was farming, disking, and I don't know where he's at. So we went to his house. Everything seemed to be good there. We left there, going to go to my mom's house. And we're on that dirt road. I can't think of what road that is.
You.
You road.
You. That goes by your mom's house.
Well, no, this would have been where Mike McCarty used to live.
Yeah, it might be.
Because it was.
Might be W Road.
I, you know, they've got all these nice number names. I just go by Mike McCarty's old place.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going that dirt road, and don't see much smoke. They go, oh, Mom's okay. Well, Dustin, I don't know how he and where he ended up, but somebody called Dustin and said, Mark and Mary, both Zidens, everybody north are in trouble. There's a fire coming from the north. So we are then about to town, and we said we'd go to Mark and Mary's house. And frankly, it looked like it was going to miss them. It looked like the smoke and everything was east. So we did leave there, headed out to Mom's, got stuff out of Mom's house. I got her car. I was headed to Julie and Heidi's house, then from Mom's house. And you were headed there also. And that's where we got separated, and we never got back together. I ended up with Mother's car, and Heidi and I took, she had their big trailer, the rodeo trailer full of household stuff and pets. And we took that to my house and then got my car and put Mother's car in our shed. And then we came back to her house to get a pickup load of horses. She had already loaded all their horses. And she had brought Haley's kids from town because Haley got caught west of town and couldn't get back in to get them from Miss Jane when they evacuated Ashland. Haley couldn't get her kids. So Heidi had picked up Haley's two, her two, and Kimberly Courtney's two kids. She had them all out of her house, plus loading stuff in that, from the house and the horses. And Kimberly showed up and got her kids. And we left with the horses. That's, I'm going to say, about 4:30. And we had been in the house, and when we came out, it was like instant, it was just black smoke. We had not. There was no way we knew it was that close. We thought, we were just being careful. Thought we had plenty of time. It wasn't going to get this far. Just kind of nonchalantly doing our thing. And it was black outside. So we went to our house, and this, we ended up going to Coldwater. Heidi, the horses, the kids. And then we ended up in Dodge with horses and spent the night. So my story, I didn't ever have the drama they had.
So how did you get to Dodge from Coldwater?
We went north of Coldwater to Greensburg and then across through Buckland. We had, you know, all of Jules' horses. My horses I'd left shut up in the corral at our house. We just didn't think the fire would ever get to there. And Jules didn't want his horses back in the county because we were going to go to Kyle's with them. And he said, no, that's not out of danger yet. So we just took him to the rodeo grounds. They told Jules that it'd be open. And we got a room. And Heidi's mother came in the next day. Heidi's mom stayed with the kids, and then Heidi and I brought Haley's kids and came home and went to doing what we could do. Like I say, that's when we got separated and never got back together.
So where did you go?
You know, somewhere in there, I went to check on Kelly's mother's place, and then I saw smoke, and thought it was. It was, looked like it was close to Jules' place, and I was headed there on that Sitka Road, hard, and I saw smoke about Jack Underwood's place. I saw smoke going across the road, and I just kept going, and there was cars coming out of it. And they was driving really fast, and the last car that I met, it was flashing its lights hard at me, and I had a trailer on, with my Ranger, and I took it for his word, you know, flashing lights, so I just pulled out of the ditch and made a circle, and I went back 3/4 mile. To the road that goes south, it goes down to by Kenny Domi's. That's 2 miles south down there. And I was driving as hard as my pickup would go. And I get down there in the road, and it's going across the road there.
Jack Kenny's, because it came kind of comes like from the north up here and it's going southeast, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's gone across the highway. It's gone across the Sitka Road, and now you're also going down by where Swayze's and Kenny Domi and Kirk Pike is.
And it was pretty dark there, but I went across there and I got on the highway and it cleared up. And I got to Sitka, and Jewel's all right. And I think...
Were they already gone? Kelly's already gone?
Yeah, they're already gone.
I don't know where... Yeah, they've already left. And I was over... I went running back over to my house to check it. And I'm not really sure how Jewel and I got together. But we were coming back to his house. We were driving. We were right north of Sitka, and Stan called Jewel, and Stan said his pickup's on fire. Could he come and get him? And Jewel said, "Dad, we got to get help Stan." And I pulled. He was just right there. There was an entrance to a wheat field, and I pulled in there, and we unloaded that Ranger right quick. We run over to that spoke, and it was really boiling across the road. You couldn't see anything, you know. And I told Jewel, I said, "Jewel, you got to get off." And he says, "Dad, you can't go through there." And I said, "Yeah, I can go through there." "Dad, you can't go through there. You'll never make it." I said, "Yeah, get off." And he said, "Dad," and I said, "Jewel, get off." And he got off. And I took off. And, you know.
And you're down on Sitka Road, right?
Yeah.
Is that where you're at?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, honestly, you know, see, I'd already, there was somewhere in there, you know, I mean, that's where it was burning when I turned around.
Yeah.
When you met those cars.
Yeah, when I met those cars. And this is probably, you know, I'm saying this might be 30 minutes later. And it's still burning there. It's still, you know, it's still going across the road. You know, and I met the head fire 2 miles south. So, you know, it wasn't, logically you wouldn't drive through smoke. You know, you shouldn't. And I didn't, you know, it could have been a mile wide. It was only, I suppose it was 50 to 100 yards wide. I don't know. But it burnt, you know, it was pretty hot.
Was there fire on both sides of the road when you were going down?
I couldn't really see any fire.
It
was so black. You couldn't really see.
And it's black smoke, not gray smoke?
It's black smoke.
Real dark black?
Yeah.
Like night?
Yeah, yeah.
So how'd you find Stan?
Well, you know, this, you know, it just, all of, everything was, I don't know. It was just... He was standing out there in the middle of his pickup was on fire.
Yeah.
Burning up, just actually melting the pickup. And there he sat, and it was, you know, he's kind of in open. And I pulled up and I said, "Get on." He just sat there. It was like he's in shock or something, you know. I said, "Stan, get on." And he got on, and we drove back to that. To the smoke again. I said, you know, it gets pretty intense, but it don't last very long. I covered up my face, and just he said, "Let's go." So we went back through it.
What do you have to cover up your face with?
Just my hand.
Your hand?
Just my hand. I just held it over. That's all I did. I had sunglasses on, you know, and just trying to. But we get through there, and Jewel was over there waiting on us, and. We went back to the pickup, and we took Jewel to his house, and then we went to Sitka Junction and headed east toward my house.
Nobody stopped you at the Sitka Junction?
No, there wasn't anybody there. And we get just to those hills east of Matt Wilson's, those tall hills. Excuse me, and that's. The smoke was coming across there really hard. And
Could you see fire?
No, just smoke. But you could feel the heat. You could sure feel that. We were driving, and the next thing I know, it's getting rough. You know, I'm off the highway. I said, "Stan, I can't see." And he hollered. He said, get right. He could see on those hills, the double yellow lines for no passing. He could see that in the center.
You're on the wrong side.
I'm crawling on the north ditch. And we drove across that thing on the wrong side of the road. And because he could see those lines, and he just kept me going. We got through that. And we got to my house, and it was good. We didn't have anything there. So, and we could see smoke down by his place. So we went flying down there. Well, as we got closer, I said, "Stan, that thing's about to get you. Is your tractor down here?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "You got a disc?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Let's hook it on." I guess I'd got a call. I know better, because there was a fire coming at my house, and I needed to get back there. But I was going to take him to his house. You know, he have a vehicle. And, well, I helped him hook his disc on. And then, you know, the fire was getting really close to his house. And I run up there and in my pickup and tried to beat on it a little bit, you know, tried it with a shovel. And he got there, and the grass was short enough right around his house that it kind of kept from going toward his house. It was burning some other stuff out there. And I talked to him, and I said, "I got to get back to my house." I said, "Go." So I left him and went back to our house. And then I'm not... It just kind of all scrambled in. It was somewhere or another. I went and got my disc, and it was in dark. You know, it was nighttime, man. So.
So you're not only in smoke; it's also dark.
Yeah, and I could see flames in really good. Yeah. Flames really big.
Getting really close to where your house is.
Yeah, and I went around there. I went around. It was on the other side of a draw. I don't own this draw, or this pasture, we've had cattle in there before, you know, and we've rented it, and it's kind of a nasty little old draw. There's not very many places you can cross it, and it was coming, you know, and I was trying to shut it down. The fire trucks was everywhere, you know, but none available for me right at the moment, you know. It was about... And so I was disking and knocking it down, and that it was going to that draw, and I thought it was one of those places. It looked to me like it was one of those places where I could cross. And I pulled into it slow, and I mean, it just, the bottom fell out of it. That if the disc wouldn't have been on there, the tractor would have laid over. But, and it just, it was like, it was kind of unreal how it happened. The tractor, the flames were coming hard at us. And the tractor would spin and then jerk and go forward 10 foot, and then it'd spin and do that again. You know, in the daylight, you go back and look where I was at, it should never have made it out of there. But I did, and I got over on the road. I was going to go around and get on the other side of the draw, and I got over there, and that's... I thought, dadgum, I can't hardly see. The lights is getting dimmer, and I looked to my right, and there was flames shooting up the side of my tractor. So I just pulled in the ditch, and I got out, and it was on fire. And I got out, and I sat there for a little bit, and I thought, shoot, it wasn't burning on the left side. So I thought, I'll go back and get my toolbox out of there. And I stepped on the steps to get in there, and I can remember, you know, I've been in that tractor a million times, but I couldn't remember where the door handle was. I think it probably got scared.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Okay, so Stan's been in the fire and lost his pickup, and you have to go save him. And so you get him saved and get him home, and then you go home and get on the tractor and are plowing around to save things. And then you get kind of close to the fire, and it sets your tractor on fire.
It did.
How are you feeling about now?
Well, you know, I didn't realize I was. I guess adrenaline was going. You know, I didn't realize that. I didn't know
how scared you were.
Yeah, I didn't know.
So you're out there by yourself, or
there wasn't
nobody around?
No.
Anybody else coming on tractors, or
no?
No fire trucks anywhere in sight.
And I did open the door, and I latched the toolbox lid, and stepped down off there, and I made probably two steps, and there was a boom, and then the flames just shot up that left side right where I was at. Just, it probably burned a fuel line in two is what we think, and just shot. But, you know, that was pretty intense heat.
Right.
It wouldn't have been good if I'd still been up there getting that toolbox, I don't think. But a CMS truck came. And not too long after, you know, it was burning, the tractor was burning. I was standing at the back of it, and it pulled up, and of course you couldn't go through. There were power poles down and everywhere. And anyway, they gave me a ride back around to my house, and then the fire trucks did show up.
So your house was okay, the...
At that
fire
time,
hadn't gotten too close to it yet.
Yeah, it was. There was another tractor that showed up, and then some fire trucks, and they got it put down enough that it quit burning. It was, you know, I think that probably from that time on, I expect it was 6 to 10 times that it would refire. You know, the wind would change and it'd go again.
So, did the wind ever die down? Let's say from when you left town and we're going down like by Domi's, high wind, and then when you came back to Jules, it's still high?
It's still high.
And when you were on the tractor?
Yeah, and that was at night, you know, but it would change. The wind would be out of the northwest, and then the next thing you know, it'd be out of the southwest.
So the temperature ever change?
You know, I don't remember the temperature.
Don't remember it getting cold?
No, I don't.
Did you stay out all
night? I remember it. Well, because I had the little kids, and we were up there putting horses away. I had a coat. None of them had coats, and it was cold. So the next morning, I went and got them clothes. And then Haley told us, and then she probably told us, when they left her house and went to Mom's, she had a little pump-up sprayer. And the hose on it was froze up.
Oh, that's right.
And Dustin looked at his phone and said, well, yeah, it's 28 degrees. And a lot of people have said, I didn't realize it got that cold.
Yeah. I
didn't know what time it was either.
But yeah.
Know, that night, I know I didn't sleep a wink.
You know, were you at your house most of the night?
Yeah, I would go from my house to Buell and Heidi's house to Karen's house. Making circles, because you could see it coming. You could see the flames across there, and you know it. I was pretty certain that Jules was getting it, and then the next thing you know, it'd be over at Carolyn's. You know, I think it really wasn't. You know, it was pretty close, but they weren't ever.
Did you run into a lot of people with their own spray tanks out running up and down the road?
That's what saved our place, is those guys. Yeah, they, you know, I mean, we're getting ahead of them, but when it finally really did get to our house, it was a road grader and farm pickups with tanks.
And there was firemen that showed up then.
There was.
They were just so scattered.
Oh, yeah.
You hate to say, yes, it was the farm pickups, and no, there wasn't firemen. But my gosh.
Yeah,
where were they? They weren't like they were in town doing nothing.
They were you know, the
it
thing...
Just, who ever happened to be there?
Were they Comanche County fire trucks, or were they Clark County, or were they somebody else's fire trucks? Could you tell?
I had more Comanche County fire trucks. Right. One thing I was using, I had two farm pickups that I had, you know, they're friends of mine, and they'd call me to check on me. And I said, I'm on, you know, it's coming. And they'd run back and shut it down for
a while.
Who
was that, Scott Westrup?
Scott Westrup and Andrew Leeper.
Cade was somewhere around.
Cade.
And Randy Schroner was with Scott.
Yeah.
He'd come up.
Todd Price came with the road grader. I'm not sure if I ever did see Clark County. You know, it just, there were so many people. That, you know, you ask about if the wind ever went down, you know, the second day. That evening, they'd been out there fighting it, and the wind just quit. And the pasture north of my house, is what we call the horse pasture, it had burnt. And, if it got on fire and the wind came out of there, it could be coming at my house again, yeah. You know. And so one of those guys suggested of backfire, burn it out. So that's just what we did. Yeah. And we had a good fire going. And, you know, it wasn't hardly moving at all. It was just perfect. And I mean, here come the army. These guys, and they was from...
Is this a strike team that came in?
Yeah, I guess you'd call them that. There were 10 or 12 rigs.
Yeah, they from Mulvane and over in Ark City, but they had
big
kind
rigs.
Of army trucks looking deals. Holy smokes. They just blew by. They about run over one of the guys, one of the firefighters. It was protection. Protection was out there.
Uh-huh. They're in some armors from Wilmore.
Yeah.
Rangers, they all have their own rigs that went that way. Cade,
yeah,
Wolf Oaks,
yeah, Tyler. Anyway, Cedar. they come in there, and one of the firefighters said, "Hey, we're backfiring." I said, "We was told to put this out. Well, we're trying to backfire." And he said, "We're going to the next one." I mean, but they about run over.
They come in there like. But you know, you gotta appreciate them.
Absolutely.
You don't dare say anything wrong because.
So Tuesday morning when you got up,
he never did sleep.
If
really.
You didn't really go to sleep, but okay. So the next morning when the sun comes up, let's say, what could you see from your house?
There was smoke, all directions.
Do you have any fire that you could see?
I had fire. There was fire. That was Tuesday morning. That was before. So we backfired it Tuesday night. So
yeah.
It was Tuesday morning when there was fire everywhere, and there was one that's coming at me. I called those guys again. I said, "Hey, this thing's coming," and they got in a. There were some big old cottonwood trees down there, and it got into those.
That draw where he run the tractor off is that pasture.
And
it.
That dadgum thing, you know, and that's, there was enough grass yet for fuel. Uh-huh. And any time that wind would blow those embers, boom, here it come again. And anyway, they watered it down pretty good. And then... I guess it was about noon when you showed up or
no,
something?
No, I got there about 9.
Oh, not really?
Yeah. So you didn't know what time of anything. So I'd gotten back from Dodge. Heidi and I had gotten back from Dodge. And that's when it was all black. I don't remember seeing so much flame other than the pasture behind us, some old trees burning. But it just was all black.
So did you come down 160?
Yeah.
Out of town? What did you think? What were your reaction when you went by? All those places.
Well, you know, we really didn't see burn. I'm trying to think where we ran into the first burn was because Kyle's house was fine. And we were told that. You know, we talked off and on all night between him and Jewel and Haley and Dustin. And we couldn't believe Kyle was okay. And then I can't think where we hit the burn because it appeared that the Cryer Tree Row wasn't burnt either. We hit it just about Garth, I guess, is where we kind of run into burn. And at that time, Heidi and I weren't in the same vehicle. And I had just met Haley with the girls. So I was, you were just in awe and surprised that Ashland had made it. And I come through town going home. And I think I talked to you, and they were still fighting that, we call it the Mormon pasture behind us. And you hadn't slept. But anyway, when I got home, we ended up going to town for breakfast. Sitting in there eating breakfast at Dawn's with Jeremy and Stan. And that's when, that was the next morning. That was the next morning, Wednesday. Anyway, when I got in, it was 10 o'clock or so, and you said, I'm going to take a nap. I haven't been to sleep yet. I said, okay. And you said, you got to keep an eye on that tree. I said, all right, I can do that. So I got the Ranger, and I have a tank of water that I put in the back of the Ranger to spray weeds and spot spray stuff. So I went and put that in the Ranger and filled it with water, and there was no wind at that time. He went to bed, and I went over and sat at this tree and just piddling with this tree. And it's about noon, 1 o'clock or so, Dustin called and said, hey, Bryce had just called. And he was up north of town fighting. He'd taken a tanker trailer up there with water for the fire because it was coming from the north now. And I said, oh, really?
So north of protection.
North of protection, yes. I was down in this bottom, and I said, it's windy? And he said, yeah, the wind's coming up again. And I said, shoot, it's real pretty where I'm at, because there was no wind. And I just kind of playing with this tree, just trying to keep it. Wanted the tree to go ahead and burn out, but I thought I'd moved. I'd taken a rake and a shovel and moved stuff around that tree, and I had it pretty wet with my little spray tank. And he said, well, Bryce's horses are in town. They're evacuating the protection again. And this is Dustin. He said, could there be a way you guys could go get his horses? They're in the trailer. They're ready to go. And I said, sure. So I ran to the house, got him up. We got to town, and I got Bryce's pickup. And by then, protection was full of smoke, and you could see it coming. So we hurried home, and when we came over Red Hill at the bridge, I thought our houses were gone because that tree had started back up. And the flames were, the smoke, I couldn't see the other house hardly. You could see the old White House, but you could barely see that. And we pulled in the drive, and he had the car, and he pulled up the house to get the dog out of the house. And the house, like I said, I was surprised it wasn't burned up. It just looked like it was in flames. And the flames that we saw was the fence row, 100 yards of wheat field between our house and that pasture. And it's like Randy, how did Randy say it? That's the most...
Randy's runner, he said, how many acres of wheat in this field, Steve? And I said, 15. He said, that might be the most valuable 15 acres of wheat you've ever planted. And it really was.
It saved them. But we have evergreens, and it was so hot. We sat back there behind the Ranger and just sat there in the Ranger and prayed, And I just kept waiting for one of those evergreens to go, and it didn't. We lucked out. Todd called Steve. We got the dog out. We parked the car and everything out in the field, and we was running back up to the house to get the Ranger. And Todd called you and said, Steve, you need help. And you said, yes. And he must have been coming down the dirt road by the gas plant.
To be that close.
And he come in there, and we had a hot wire around the house. And he kind of goes like this. I just went, right on the wire. Anyway, he saved, he plowed along that fence line on our side of the fence and stopped a lot of the fire. And then he went back around, and Steve, somebody said they saw you out there with a shovel beating a bunch of it out. And Todd went back on the other side of the fence line and plowed again. He just went right through it with that. I can't believe you. And then it's like fire trucks showed up.
That's when the fire truck showed up. Yeah. Right behind that.
Right behind him and that road grader.
And so then they're there, and then later you decide to do a back burn.
No.
That evening. Yeah. Oh, the horse pasture caught
fire. That's right.
The wind changed again, and it's coming north of our house up the draw through that horse pasture that we call. So that's when we decided to just go. Because it was evening then, 4 or 5 o'clock. Yeah. And they decided to go ahead and just let it burn and be done with it. And there was 8 trucks in there.
Yeah.
Letting it burn. Frankly, they were setting it too.
We was
to be done with it.
We was without electricity. And it was, it had burnt. It was burning back. It was moving back toward the burnt. It couldn't burn anymore headed east. So it was headed back to the west. And it had about 100 yards. We went to Kelly's mom's place and took a shower.
She had electricity?
Yeah, yeah, she had electricity. And we went out there and took a shower. And then we headed back over there to, well, we popped a hill and there was fire trucks going like about out of heck to get...
They were pulling that Mormon pasture. And that pasture burnt for like 3 days. A lot of old dead trees in there. Lots of weeds, lots of fuel in that old pasture. And it had been... We wished they would have let it just burn out that day. They kept putting it out. And we kept saying, just let it burn. There was no wind. And everything mm-hmm. around it had kind of been burnt. Didn't think it would go anywhere. And
yeah.
They fought it for 3 or 4 days. They kept putting trees out. But it was, I mean, that's what they were there for.
Yep. So did you get a night's sleep on Tuesday night, or were you up all night?
We spent the night at Mom's. Mom was in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So we spent the night at Mom's Tuesday night. It was Wednesday morning. We were going home. We went by Jewel's house because they still weren't out of danger. David and Jewel, that was all still burning around there. And it was back burning into them from behind them then. From the east, it was coming back. Anyway, we hate to call everybody because you know everybody's still asleep. So we just drove by their house. It looked good. So we went to Dawn's to eat breakfast and run into Jeremy and Stan. We all were eating with them. And that's when Jewel, a friend of Jewel's, had seen Sitka on fire. I can't believe Dave and Jewel's houses are still there.
And Eldora's.
Yeah, exactly.
You see all three of those houses.
Did you see the picture of the elevator?
That's sure. The picture that Jewel got as a text. And he sent Steve the text, and we were all eating breakfast. And Steve, he said there was his phone, and he slid it over to me, and it says Jewel's house on the text. We just left Dawn's running and headed to Sitka. Well, we get to the Y, and Jewel calls Steve and says, what about that picture? And Steve says, well, isn't that your house? He goes, no, Stockton had seen it on the news, so he took a picture of it with his phone, texted to Jewel, titled it Jewel's house. Jewel then sends it to us, and Jeremy Hazen says, well, when I looked at the picture, I thought, well, it's still dark. And I said, well, I've taken a lot of daytime pictures with my phone that'd be dark. And then when you really look at it, you can see the elevator. You can see, you've seen the picture. You can see what it is. It wasn't Jewel's house.
It's the social club.
Right.
The Sunrise Building.
Yeah. And we thought it was his house. And
you know, when it was titled Jewel's house, I didn't have to look for it. I saw it and it was gone.
Kayla thought it was David's house. And the look at the direction that the picture's taken. It's south.
Yeah, but you know it you couldn't see until you focus on what you're looking at. It was hard to tell.
Like I said, when it was titled Jewel's house, I didn't
and
look
I
at any.
See how Kayla pictures. Would think. You know how? Why were their houses spared?
Yeah.
Any of those? Like you say, it just. Because that CRP, which Myron's farm ground north of him, which was CRP, had enough growing on it that I can't believe it didn't.
One time,
get any of
one
that.
Time Monday night, I was running over to get, because it looked like Jewel or Carolyn's place is on fire, and it looked like it was about to get them, and I looked to the north in Myron's house. There was a place, it was dark down there, and there was a flame shooting up, not very far from his house. And his road is terrible rough down his place. And I drove down there as hard as I could go, because I'm wanting to get over to check our stuff, you know. And anyway, there's a deal just right north of his house, it's on fire, and it just keeps getting bigger. And I hollered at, or honked, I guess, and Myron comes to the door, and looked up. He saw the fire, and he went and grabbed some pants and jumped on his skid loader, and he had a flashlight that he stuck in his mouth and was using that for lights to see to drive that skid loader over there. And I've got a spotlight on top of my pickup, and I got it turned on. Anyway, he put dirt on this fire and got it out. And I waved at him and just took off, and here we go. But, like, you know, all those places, every place that I thought was, you know, those ties right across from Jules' house was on fire at that time. You know, and if the wind would have switched there, it could have been a bad deal.
Did they have some times when the fire did cross the road and come close over by their house?
I don't know.
It did get in around the, you know, there's a lot of bricks and stuff from the old buildings that the welding shop and all that we used to sit there. It did burn into that a little bit. And, you know, and that's Tuesday morning. I think it was, I don't know what, no, one Tuesday morning, because that's when Heidi and I had gotten a bunch of groceries at Dodge before we came home, and I took some to their house, sandwich meats, to build sandwiches, you know, and then I took some to our house. And I don't think, there wasn't anybody there Tuesday morning, it was Wednesday morning, T.C. Dawson was there with his rig. And then Jewel made the comment, he said, I don't know how Tyler did it, but he said, I'd call Tyler Wolfolk through the night. It's getting close again, and Tyler would be back. He said, I don't know where he come from. And then come to find out they were in trouble down there, but Tyler always seemed to be there. He said he just, you know, and then T.C. sat there in his yard that next day, and that's when it was backburning into all of them there, across Jim Cox's pasture behind Jewel's house. And Heidi said Jewel was taking a nap, and she was to keep track of it. And there was fire trucks out there. You know, so she said it was hard. But, you know, they'd been up all night long. And now they took, I took garden hose from our bins to Jewel's house to help. Heidi didn't have enough hose. I can't think of when I did that. Oh, when I took Mom's car over there. She and I went down. We have a bunch of hose for the winter when we have cattle on wheat pasture. Right? Anyway, we went and got a whole bunch of hose from down there and drug it over to Heidi's.
You didn't have any cattle close to your house?
No.
So at your house, what you lost was pasture and fence.
And a tractor.
And a tractor. Do you know about how much fence you lost?
Seven and a half miles or so.
7-8 miles is what.
And how much acres pasture was?
600 acres.
Huh? 400. Yeah, about 700 to 800 acres.
We filled out how many papers. We still have to count it, you know. You still have to think about what it was.
You know, it was Monday night whenever I went down. I've got a bull pasture. And the fire was, you know, I'd been up around my house so much, and I finally got down there to the bull pasture, and I could see kind of embers out there. And the fire had already went through there. And I, right at this one corner, it wasn't burnt. And that's where there was a gate to go in the wheat field. And I opened that gate, and I hollered and hollered and hollered at the bulls, thinking that they'd, you know, they'd come to cake, and they'd come to my holler. And I didn't see him. You know, I thought, I was pretty certain they was gone. And we went down there the next morning, or the next day, with a gun, thinking that we'd have to put them, something out of misery, you know, probably. And there was 8 heifers that we was gonna stick one of those bulls with, you know, our choosing what bull was gonna put. But anyway, we'd open that gate where if they were in there, they could go in with those heifers on wheat. And out of the 4 bulls, there's 3 of them was out there, and the 4th one was not too far. He just hadn't seen the gate. And they got out, you know, they were just now getting out there, and anyway, they was all right.
Yeah. So that'd be south of Sugarloaf.
And you know,
it's a mile south of the road that goes by Sugarloaf.
It wasn't those heifers. Surely, probably got bred, and it wasn't maybe the mating we wanted, but they were alive.
So, did you lose any cattle?
Not one.
Did you help people shoot cattle afterwards?
I didn't. She helped.
Wouldn't help Mary.
Did you have to shoot a whole bunch? Or?
I didn't help her shoot any. She did it herself. She shot all of them herself. I say that. I think Kellenberger might have helped her some. But she went and did it. Heidi went and helped her one day. And Heidi came home that night rather frustrated because Mary was doing this and needed help dragging deads and piling them up. You had to pile them up, count them, get pictures. Mm-hmm. She said, we need more help. And I said, okay, tomorrow we'll go. And that's when Eli and I and took the Ranger and an old four-wheel-drive pickup over. And Heidi, and he drugged the calves and we drove to the cows. And
so how long did that take? A couple of days? Or
we did it all day that day.
All day?
Yeah. We did all that day, and Mary and Heidi had done it all the day before. It's the most morbid scene I'd ever seen. You know, I just can't imagine how scared those poor animals were.
Yeah.
And caught in the fence. How many of them we had to cut out the fence and drag them off? You know, and they were caught in that fence and couldn't get away. And went right by a pond. And, you know, Matt and Janae Wilson's cows, luckily for them, praise the Lord, they lost one cow, I think. And I don't know sure what their count was. But I think out of 80 head, and they found a pond. And Mary's cows come down a hill right by the pond. Went right by it. Couldn't see it. Didn't find it. That bunch. That was 67 head we drug and piled up. And see, she, I don't know her count. She can tell you her count. She lost more than that. And
you know, from the very start of this story, when we first went over and moved those cows, and that fire was that far away, not a chance in the world for it to get there. 45 minutes later, Kyle calls. It says there's not a brown stitch of grass in that pasture. It's all black. It burned every bit of it. And it was, you know, like I said, it was a long ways from it.
So have you had any experience with wildfires before? Have you fought any before? Can you kind of, like, give an idea of how previous fires were different than this fire? How this fire was so much bigger?
Yeah, it was. You know, the wind was... humidity was right. You know, just like they said, it was a perfect storm in summer. You know, the wind was so high, and the CRP was so big. Even the pasture grass was big. We'd had rain, and you know, the fuel was there, and it was just. But it was just unreal. I could be out there by myself, watching this fire. And it was be going away from me, and all at once, the wind would switch. I could feel it hit me on a different part on my arm, and I'd look back where it was coming from, and there come flames. It was just a one after another like that. It changed. I don't know how many times. I've never seen it change like that. And it, you know, I didn't fight it in a truck. You know, so, but I've heard, you know, numerous stories about them guys driving as hard as they could go to get out of there, you know, to get in front of it. And, you know, it came across there so hard. You know, it was just unreal. You know, it's surreal. You know, she said that Haley asked her mom, is this the end of the...
Yeah, when I was headed to Coldwater with the kids, Haley called. They were sitting at the 12-mile corner and watching from that direction. And she called. She says, Mom, is this the end of the world? And the guy said, I don't. It might be. You know, I didn't know what to say. It sure felt like he was
in the Bible. It prophesied. That's what's going to happen. You know.
Yeah. It looked pretty evident. You know, and when we went to Mary's yard earlier in our trip, she had Wade, Kyle's boy, because he had been sick, and we decided. I said, Mary, we can go move those cows. We had that ranger. She had a cake pickup. And we sit there and look at the smoke. I think it's all going northeast of us. We're okay. And the weather, for 2 days, the weather told us it's going to be windy that day. And that's when we shipped those cattle that morning. We got it done when it was calm. And it just was.
So when did you find out that there was two fires? That it was.
That's then.
When you were at Mary's?
Yeah. When Dustin called and said there's one in the north, and Bo Zidens and Mary and Charlie Monshart, all of that in there is in trouble.
And I don't remember thinking, how in the world can it get there? We just saw it.
And here we thought Mom was in trouble, and here she didn't. As we were driving across that road, we thought, well, it ain't going to get to Mother's. Well, the one from the north is the one that come down to get Mom, that got Mary. And we left Mary's yard, and she said, no, just go get Mom's stuff. I've got mine loaded. I've got Wade loaded, and it looks like it's going east of us. And she called 30, 45 minutes later. I was headed to Sitka then with Mom's stuff, and Mary said, I don't think I have a house left. I got out of the yard just in time. I said, you what? I just left there. And she goes, yeah, you came through fast. And you've got her story. Plant fescue grass, she says. So anyway,
so when did you go from fighting fire to repairing and rescue and having people come help?
I think
the next day.
I think the next day is when our first fencing crew showed up.
Like Wednesday, Thursday?
I think it was.
Yeah, more like probably Thursday, because they were here through the weekend, because we worked through a Sunday. They got here like Thursday or Friday.
They got here Thursday morning. They showed up with material, a skid loader and a post digger and a postal digger, and they had water and quickcrete.
Where'd they come from?
They came from Porter, Oklahoma. They were a friend of ours lives down at down by Lawton, and this guy was a friend of hers in college, and she got him to, she heard about us, and anyway, him and another guy, and he's
the ag teacher.
Ag teacher at Porter, and and he got another guy, and then there was four boys. There were six of them, and they come down, and and we was a drop point for hay. And they was in a hurry to want to start, and they went to jerking fence out, they'd have something done before I could. There'd be other hay coming in. They'd call me, and I need to go over and unload hay. And
we didn't know where to start, what to do. And they just came in and did it for us.
Yeah, they just blew through stuff and did an excellent job. Everything was donated. People down there, Wheeler Metals down there, they donated all the pipe, and it was just kind of unreal how
they got ready so fast.
Yeah.
How they got to us.
They just
so quick
just,
when we're standing here going, where do we start? And the hay was coming in, you didn't know where to go, and supplies and friends bringing stuff, and you wanted to be there when they got there, and these guys just came in and went to work building fence.
Talk about the letters that you got from kids from other areas.
Uh-huh. We stopped down here at Ashland Feed Seed. I can't think what we got that day. And Jeff came over. Mom had gotten some stuff, and he handed us two letters. And they came from a grade school in Missouri. And unfortunately, the letter I got didn't have an address on it. Mother's dead, so I can't tell you where it's at. She's kept the letter. But it was a student that wish she wanted to have sent $10. She had done something and made $10. Remember what?
Yeah.
I can't remember what she'd done. And she would sure like to have sent her $10 with her letter so that would help us with something from the fire. Just the cutest little love letters. Colored little pictures on it. And I hope this makes you smile. One of them had a joke in it that I hope this makes you laugh.
Yeah.
You know, it was just sweet. And then, a month later, we had a bucket calf to feed. Not from the fire. One of the cows had a calf that wasn't getting enough milk, so we bring it back to the house, and I can't find my bottle for the calf. And I ended up finding it, but he was at the feed store like a couple days later, and Jeff said, or you saw some bottles, and he grabbed one, and he said, this is, and Jeff said, no, take that whole box. And he said, no, all I need is one. Anyway, he ended up with a whole case in the faith call. By the time he came home, Jeff stuck this box in there. He gets the bottles home, and I open one of these bottles, and in each bottle, was there eight bottles in there?
Mm-hmm.
Was a letter from a grade school where that box of bottles came from. They had colored pictures and put those in there.
Cool.
It was cute, you know. And
hope has cheered you up.
Just little notes.
Sorry for you.
Yeah, and just cute little fourth grade class from, it has an address on it.
We got salt feeders. They made pretty nice salt feeders, and the kids had wrote a magic marker on them, you know, whatever their name was, and hope this cheers you up.
Little scriptures. Some of them have scriptures on them.
Yeah.
You know, those came out of Missouri.
The second group of guys came it was just two guys. They came from Ellis
and Hill City.
And the guy from Ellis is 73 years old. And his name was Leroy, and I said, you're just exactly. What I needed, you know, it was just made we could laugh.
They were good guys.
They were really a lot of fun.
Kind of characters. And, you know, Kim would call. At the time, I think Holly had gone on.
She had a conference to go to.
Yes. So Kim took over what Holly was doing. And Kim would call and had people and, you know, hear this group of guys that come from Porter. And we'd work from Thursday. They left Sunday evening. We were exhausted.
They wore out.
You know, and then she called Monday morning and said, hey, I've got a couple guys. Can you use them? And I said, Steve, I'm tired. And he goes, don't turn them down. They're here. So I came over and got Leroy and Darius was his name. And they came, anyway, they followed me back over here. And they just turned out, we stay in touch with them. Super nice guys.
Leroy, like I say, 73 years old. And it was on a Monday. Don's is closed. So Kelly fixes dinner at home, and we go to the house, and we're walking in ashes. We're black. We kind of knock our clothes off, and we take our shoes and boots off out on the porch. And you know, there's chairs everywhere out there. And anyway, we go in and eat dinner. We come back out, and I'm sitting down putting my shoes on, and Leroy's standing up, putting his on and tying them while he's standing. And I said, Leroy, there's a chair right here. I'm not that old. He didn't to me. That's the kind of guy he was, you know. He was super good people, you know. But they, I told him... I just can't believe all the things that's happened, how the coincidence. And he says, Steve, there's not any coincidences. He said, God has done all this. And
so did you go come to town to the camp?
We did. And just have a visit with them and eat.
And
they stayed at the camp. And Leroy, turns out he's hiked the Grand Canyon 17 times. He's a goer. And they worked from Monday to Thursday with us. So we would go eat supper with them at the camp, or one night I fixed them a steak at home. You know, how do you thank these people? You know, you want to thank them the best you can. Anyway, Leroy was, they were leaving Thursday because Friday was his birthday. And they were going to be at home. And he had lost his wife a few years before that, 2 or 3 years before that. Mm-hmm. And he was struggling to tell about her. You know, they were special to each other. Anyway, mm-hmm. he left. And then was it Friday, Darius or Leroy? How did you find
Leroy
out that?
Leroy called me.
You called him. Going home Thursday, he said he just felt tired. He said, I'm just never this tired. But, you know, he said, kept telling himself, because they worked hard. And he says, oh, I'm just tired. So the next morning he said he felt kind of funny still, and he called the doctor, and they told him to come in, and they put him in the hospital Friday afternoon, and Monday he had 5 bypasses.
Wow.
So hearing he was a goer, and we drove up and saw him.
We drove up and saw him Sunday. The Sunday before he had his operation.
He was at AIDS.
He put it on the Facebook. He said, how he appreciated us coming all the way up there to see him. And I laughed, or I chuckled. I said, you know, I wrote back, I said, how can you say that we drove all the way up there? How about you driving all the way down to help us fix pants?
You ask about if we ate down here, and Stan, I think, is the one that made the comment one night when we were down there eating. You know, nobody wanted this fire here, but of all the communities to have the fire at, how fortunate were we to have that camp, that facility, to put up these people, and our local people provide the food and the work and the labor that they did. I mean, it all happened here, like Ruiz said, there is no circumstance, it all happens just for a coincidence, yeah.
So who were some of the people or agencies that proved most helpful during the fire, or after the fire? Anybody that sticks out in your mind, or any specific group that came in, or agency that helped?
You know, the Mennonite guys brought in a load of people one day and worked for... Oh, I'm sorry, you and I both need to stretch on it. Came in and worked a day.
There's still the church camp and Kim and Holly.
Yeah.
That was probably the most beneficial to us.
To locate people in the
they
place.
They'd line us up with people to help.
That had to be mind-boggling.
Toward the end is when the Amish boys came, and they brought their own, they brought their own cooks. And they weren't Amish, but they lived right there with them. And these two ladies and anyway, they prepared the meals down at the Methodist Church, and
that's when the camp was getting remodeled.
Yeah,
they could stay there, but they couldn't use the kitchen. So that was
one of the cook's sons, kind of him and I talked, and he was kind of the leader of the bunch. And some of those guys came and helped us, and then they wanted me to come and eat supper with them, and I did eat supper with them. And then I ate breakfast the next morning, and then I,
along with the Amish, the same time the Amish got here from Pennsylvania, Father Novak from St. Mary's.
Oh, that's right.
Was here, and he had 4 boys with him and another fellow. And that's how you got it. Kim called and said, because we were kind of at a standstill at building fence. Other things were happening. We were needing to farm. We were needing to do other things. And she called and she said she had, I can't think of his name, Paul, a little Mennonite fellow, and the boy that was with him, and then Father Novak and a boy. And the rest of them went with the Amish to go help Brad Pike and then the Eaglewood, a bunch of them. They divided. Anyway, that's how we got into them, because Father Novak helped us build fence, and we kind of got done, and he said, a bunch of these boys are helping Brad Pike. We need to go help them, because we had a tractor with a post hole digger, and they were digging all the holes by hand. So Father Novak talked to us, and he asked us, and we went, you know, shoot fire, we'll go help Brad Pike. And that's where we met the Amish boy, was there, and the fellow that was kind of their leader, you know, the man in charge for them, and he wasn't Amish, I can't think of his name. And that's when we started eating at the Methodist Church with them. You ate couple times, breakfast and supper.
Yeah, I did.
Then invite Stephen there. But that's...
And when we finished our fence and went up there to help Brad with my tractor, some of the Amish were there, and Brad and I were the same age and we'd known each other forever.
Yeah, Brad.
Anyway, we cut up, you know, have a good time, and those Amish boys was getting a kick out of the way Brad and I sparred with each other, talked, and one of those Amish boys in particular, him and I, it just, he kind of hung around me and I liked him, you know. He was just you know, he's fun to be around. We talked, and the next morning I went over there to eat breakfast. They wanted me to come eat breakfast with them. I went up, came over here, and Junior, it was this guy, Amish boy's name, and he was standing there and he had flip-flops on. And I said, "What in the world, you got flip-flops? You can't build a fence." He said, "I'm going home, Steve." I said, "Oh, you are?" I knew the half of them was going to go. I said, "Oh, you are?" And he said, "Yep." And I could tell it was bothering him, and I didn't pursue it, you know. And I sat down, ate breakfast, and so they was gathering up and going out there to put the stuff in the van and take off. And I walked out there. I said, "Where's Junior?" He said, "He's already on there." And then this lady said, "He doesn't want to talk to you." And I said, "All right." So, and you know, they all left. And she said, "Have you got a minute?" I said, "Yeah, I got a minute." She told me that, and said, "You remember when the Amish schoolgirls were murdered?" And I said, "Oh yeah, I remember reading about it." She said, "Junior was 10 years old when that happened. He was one of the boys in the school, and one of his sisters was one of the girls that was murdered. And he's been basically a recluse since then. And he read about this fire and said, I want to get a group together." And the whole community,
Got behind him,
you know, because, you know, he'd been so quiet about this, and they, you know, it was just a big deal to them. And anyway, Junior told me about it a little, and, you know, it was hard for him.
It's hard for you too, huh?
Yeah.
So talk on the phone.
Yeah,
you keep in touch?
Yeah, we do. You know, I consider him a really good friend. And, you know, I haven't talked to him for a while, but the last time I talked to him, he's at Riverton, Wyoming. And he wanted me to try to, it was right during harvest. And he was wanting to, I guess that in the last time I talked to him, but he was wanting me to see if there's any bus routes from there to Dodge City. And I said, What do you want to go to Dodge City for? And he said, so I can come see my friend Steve Hazen. You know,
it's good. Yeah.
It was just,
We didn't find a bus route.
There
are not very many, are there?
No,
but
it was during harvest, and it was just,
yeah, too hard.
But several of those boys give me their names and addresses, and I need to write them. There's an older Amishman that was kind of in charge, of the kind of a leader of them, and the first night before I talked to Junior, he sat down and he sat down beside me and said, "Are you Steve Hazen?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, I've heard about you." I said, "Well, I'm sorry." I hope that he laughed. "No, it's good." He said, "I'm not even sure what." He didn't say. He didn't go on from there. But he said, "I want you. Here's my name and address. So I need to correspond with them."
So did you guys get interviewed a lot by reporters during the fire or after the fire?
Several, yeah.
We happened upon a couple taking pictures of the tractor that was burnt, and they interviewed us, and they were from K-State. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how our interview would end up being printed. They didn't know what they were doing with it when they interviewed us. Mm-hmm. And it ended up in a little story with something they put out. And then
that lady said that we're not real sure whether it'll ever be printed. I mean, put out, but we're doing this for history, because you know, this is the first time in history this something like this happened, and 100 years from now people need to know how we made it.
Well, and then Amy Biddle from the Hutch News Bickle. She came down.
She did it a couple of times.
She interviewed us a couple of times and took pictures.
You know, we became friends through that. You know, I have talked to her for a while either, but we're Facebook friends. I speak to her through that, and then, but I've got her, she called me about, I can't remember who it was, and I told her, she said, "Do you know," and anyway, about wherever she's been, I've known somebody from there, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty small world, but.
So what's your most vivid memory of the fire? The thing that you'll never forget.
When it was right by my house, and I was beating on it with a shovel. You know, Kelly said, "What do we do?" And I said, "Pray."
What's yours?
There's two of them. You know, when we went back to Heidi's house to get more stuff, and we didn't think we were in trouble. Mm-hmm. And when we came out, we hadn't been in the house 5 minutes. We come out, and it was just black. And you know, that's the first and the closest fire we had gotten to. And when we left there, she left ahead of me with horses, and I had kids in the car, and she's in the pickup with her. And when we got to Sitka Hill, you could see the lights. All of our people from town leaving. I mean, a string of cars. And they stopped and let her go with those horses in front of them. Why? There could have been a 30-car pileup. But everybody stopped, and she went first. We don't understand why they did that. Because, you know, to me, the fire was right behind them. They're in trouble.
It wasn't a coincidence. Yeah.
They should have been, you know, that was kind of them.
Yeah.
And it was black all the way to coal. I mean, it wasn't black. Like, I kept thinking, my house is fine. We'll just get these horses to our house and get them in the corral. We're okay. Get them out of that trailer, they'll be okay. And we got to my house, it was getting just as black. And it wasn't too far after that was headed to Coldwater when you called, and Janae and Matt's houses had gone up. And then by then I already knew Mary's house had gone up. And,
but it hadn't.
No. She thought it had, but it hadn't. And, you know, and Haley and Dustin couldn't get back into theirs. And there's just like no way it would make it. Yeah. And you know, you just think of that all the way. And the little kids, the little girls, you know. I knew Janae had lost their house, and I got emotional.
Right.
And I don't get emotional very often. Usually if the little kids see me emotional, because I'm after them, you know. And I got to crying, and the little kids go, "Granny, are we going to be okay?" And I said, "You're darn right we're going to be okay. There ain't nothing going to happen to you guys." But I shouldn't have gotten emotional in front of them, you know. I just did. It should have seemed like they've seen me weak, you know. But it did. It got, it was scary all the way to Coldwater, because it kept getting, it was following us, that soot. There was soot in Coldwater.
So when you left Sitka, was there anything on fire south of the elevator?
No.
Okay.
No, South wasn't on fire yet. I think it was just getting there. I think you weren't very far on the road coming from Mom's in the pickup. I think we were all, John and Diane Humphrey saw Jules somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. On the road, in his yard, I don't know where they met. And Diane said, you know, I've never seen Jules look so solemn. She said, he's always just kind of cheery. And she said, when we went by him, she said, John, this is bad. He's scared. And she said, I've just never seen him look so stern. So, and like I said, the only time I ever saw fire was when we started at 1:30. And I just saw it for a little bit from a long ways away. And, you know, we just kept knowing, because on the news the day before, they told us for 2 days we're going to have high winds that day.
Yep.
And we just kept looking at our phone. When's it going to come from the north? If it had come from the north, we thought we'd all be okay, because then it was going to blow all that back south, hopefully back into what it had already burnt.
Yep.
And anyway.
Is there anything positive that you perceive resulted from this fire?
The friendships, the kindness. It's unbelievable. You know, you see those. We live along the highway there, and I'd be at the bins running water for cattle or whatnot, and you see those loads of hay going by, and thinking what those people gave up to come and help you, how many miles they traveled. It wasn't easy for them, and what they gave to us. And then when you look at the grass where we live, it's helped our grass. Inglewood, the sand hills, they're going to hurt for several years. That was ugly over there, is what I think.
Yeah, it was the friendship, you know, it wasn't on the major networks about our fire, but in Facebook, there guys said, we don't need Washington, D.C. You know, we need each other, and that's just what we did.
Well, and the people out here, it says so much for our people. You know, in the city, had they burnt a block, or they have storms, or they have hurricanes, people are looting.
Yeah.
Out here, they were giving things to each other.
Yeah.
Feeding each other. Cattle have been sent. Money has been sent. You know, it's just the total opposite of what goes on in the city.
Yeah.
And
you know, the friendship, we had people from Pennsylvania and Indiana.
Ohio, Michigan.
You know, all of them, practically all of them come back.
Three of them came back. Jenny and Nick and John. John Culp and Adam come from Pennsylvania. Nick and Jenny came from Wisconsin. No, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And they were all here a month ago and spent 3 days just to see it all again. And the posts on our fence along the highway are brown with red tips. And once again, Kim or Holly, I'm not sure who, I think it was Kim that morning. Hey, I've got two guys. Would you come get them? Okay. I get over here and there's four of them. This couple, Nick and Jenny, and then John and Adam were. Anyway, when they get over there, Nick and Jenny had a pickup with a cover on their bed, and they raised the bed. They had posts, wire. They said, we didn't know for sure where we were going to get sent, but this is what we brought. So that along the highway is their fence.
Ah.
That's the Minnesota's fence, you know? And they're good kids. They're good people. Like I said, they came back and spent 3 days, and we just had a blast with them.
You know, what was ironic about that was we were I was at Spots getting something, and I said, and Sue asked me about what help we had or something. I said, we've got a couple of people from Minnesota and a couple of guys from Pennsylvania. He said, Minnesota? Oh, that's where I came from. I said, oh, really? Yeah. She said, ask them where they're from. And I said, so I just got on there and I said, I got on, you know, messaged him, and I said, where are you from? And she said, they named a little town. And Sue says, that's my hometown.
Oh.
Ask them if they know Annie and some guy, yeah. You know, he had some, I did, and Annie runs a cafe there, and they eat there every day,
yeah.
And this guy, her husband, helps them quite a bit on the farm.
It's a small world.
It's just crazy.
So, do you have anything you think you consider you need to do to prepare for something like this again, or that the community needs to do to prepare for something like this, a disaster?
I can about bet as long as I'm alive, I'm going to have wheat on the west side of my house. You know, I mean, I'm going to plant that wheat every year. I'm going to have something to stop that protects my house a little. And I'll probably mow a little bit more. You know, I think that that's part of our problem. I've heard people say, or one guy in particular said that he felt like probably the biggest problem we had is the CRP. They wouldn't let us. They worried about the bird habitat and the nesting, and they've let it get away, and it's too much fuel.
They regulate our ground too strict when the people that own the ground have operated the ground, know how to operate it, and there wouldn't have been that much fuel had the farmer and rancher gotten to use his CRP like he'd like to use it.
And
I understand what the fishing game and those guys are wanting to do, but
we just need to work together better.
The wildlife lives on the farm ground too, the birds are nesting out in the wheat field. They're nesting when you're farming. And the deer population, they're in our Milo. We don't hurt the deer population. You know, that's what that one guy said. You managed to kill more animals in 48 hours by leaving all this fuel than what you've tried to protect over how many years the CRP's been there. In 2 days, they killed more animals than how many years we've had CRP.
That's pretty true, too, I think.
And the deer, the coyotes, when we were dragging those calves, you'd find remains. Is this a calf or was this a coyote? What was this? The rabbits. You know, you didn't know what it was.
You know, another thing we kind of went by that I appreciate is school being open.
Oh, yeah.
Serving the meals and all of us going down there and eating and all the stuff that was given, you know.
And how the school teachers, those that were here, the school teachers worked their buns off. A lot of them were down there just as many hours as the firemen were out fighting, you know. And they could come in to eat any time of day, and they fed them. I forgot about that. We ate there first 2 nights, and we didn't have electricity.
Yeah.
We came in, and one night we got there, and they were out of food in the kitchen. And I think Rick Pryor bought 90-some pizzas from Fovey and took them down there and fed people through the night. And then more food came in. They were cooking more, but it wasn't ready at every shift, you know, when people come in.
The whole community, all of these little communities really, really band together, you know. Matt Wilson, his cows is out of grass, and Snyder boys over at Coldwater didn't get burnt out, and they took took all his cows in. I heard about it, or we did, and I took my truck over there and hauled cattle, you know.
We ended up at Roy Hoffman's at Coldwater. We sat at the grocery store, Heidi and the kids and I, and got Lunchables, and then we ended up at Roy Hoffman's. Kim called and said, Roy has a little rental house. We ended up there. I don't know where the food came from that was there.
Diane Humphreys had a roast
that they took with them.
That's where I thought, now, you know, they didn't just cook this in 20 minutes. As it was a crock pot. That's where it came from. But there was a huge pan of lasagna that was this long. And salad and bread. And we had already eaten the lunchables with the kids, you know, at the grocery store. But I was like, where did the food come from for us here?
Maybe that was Teresa Jellison, but I'm not sure.
That might have been Teresa. I don't know, you know,
Everywhere you turn, there's people helping people.
The kindness.
You know, on Facebook, you know, it'll tell you, share your memories from a year ago or whatever. And it, on the March 28th, it had a picture of me. I had taken a picture of my truck with a load of hay going to Medicine Lodge a year ago. Yeah. And my first load of hay to them. And then the second day is another load of hay that I was going to Medicine Lodge. And I captured it, it's pretty sad when you pull up to a place and they've lost everything. And the farmer is so thankful that he's crying. And I said, exactly 1 year ago today, I'm doing the same.
Yeah, getting the same kind of help.
Yeah, just exactly the same. I'm doing the same thing.
Well, once some of the first mails that came in was a guy from over around Sun City.
Yeah.
And we were talking, and he said, I thought I knew you. He says, I think you delivered this hay to me at the Anderson Creek, and this is what's left. We have it fed up. And, you know, we're like, unload it. So, and then, and you know, we unloaded a lot of hay. He sent a lot of hay out of there to different, you know, Buffalo. A lot of people got burnt out. Lots and loads of hay went to Buffalo. Chip Bratcher, Huck Ranch. I don't know how many, where you, you know. Maybe. It was sent. Jeff would send them to here. And you know, what the K's did That was really great of them. You can't. Yeah. There's not enough words to say what they did, because it could increase their business over the years, but for 3 or 4 months it probably hurt them, and they feed a lot of people here in town.
Oh boy!
You hate to think.
You know, there's not just anybody could do.
Yeah.
Could have the manpower and do what they did.
And to think, and I know that it happened, that people would give them grief. And they've had grief over it. And I think that those that gave them grief, karma will come around. They didn't deserve the grief that they've gotten.
Yeah.
Because they donated a lot to the community.
We've been really blessed, honestly.
Our community foundation, those people.
Absolutely.
The hours they have spent. And I can't imagine who gets what idea. You know, all this money. How do you divide that up for, you know, I've said, and we had our loss, and Roger Giles, I look at what their loss was, and I'll say, Roger, my loss doesn't, I can't even complain. He goes, it's still your loss. It still hurts you as bad as my loss hurts me. And I think, yeah, you're probably right, Roger, but there is no way you can compare. And here this community foundation had to divide money up amongst families that lost that.
Yeah, it was.
I can't imagine the stress they went through. I don't know. I don't know if you're on that committee. I don't know who is. I don't know all of them, but they need to be commended.
Yeah, it was.
That's true. So do you have any other thoughts that you'd like to include about this experience?
Well, you poor thing, this is
lasting about 2 hours. I'd hope that we don't have to go through it again. Yeah. You know, that's. I was scared. I was terrible scared.
And he doesn't scare easily.
Yeah.
It just. I felt helpless. I can't believe I left. I'm not one to leave. And then I ended up with little girls in Mason. And that just was. Kind of out of sorts.
She's not. You live very far from me, you know, and I really
felt helpless. You know, I'm sitting in Dodge in a motel room, and they're down here running for their lives, scared to death. I hope we never have to go through it again.
Yeah, really. I missed her a lot.
I didn't see the scare they had. No, I didn't see it. Did you see the fire?
Yes.
When you were leaving town?
No, when we were at Sitka, leaving Sitka to go to Buffalo. There was flames halfway up the elevator on the south side. I don't know where they were coming from. And then, like you said, you were down there by Domies and Swayze's. Saw those smoke clouds and saw the fire underneath it. But
so what time was that?
Well, let's turn this off.
Okay. Thank you for everything.
Just a second. Yeah. See, that's what I've lost track of.